everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nit Wright. What are you laughing at?
Nothing. Just very happy.
Awesome. Good to go. It's a Wednesday morning. Got a lot to get to over the course of the next 3 hours. Dez Bryant might have finally found a team. Okay. Troy Aikman thinks it's time for the Cowboys to overhaul the entire organization.
Okay.
But let us start this morning with a little good news for one Cowboy. Quarterback Dak Prescott. He's still employed. Despite an up-and-down season for the third-year quarterback, his boss, Jerry Jones, is sticking with him. Jerry said in a radio interview yesterday, quote, Dak is the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. He's young, and he's going to get extended. Jerry said what bothers him about the season is the way the team has played, not necessarily its personnel. All right, Nick, we'll kick off the conversation with you. What do you make of Jerry Jones' long-term commitment to Dak Prescott?
If this is Jerry Jones signaling that this offseason he's giving Dak Prescott an extension, it will be one of the most grievous errors Jerry Jones has made since he let go of Jimmy Johnson. Now, I talked with Ed Werder last night, on the radio, who covers the Cowboys as closely as anyone.
Great guy.
He believes this is just Jerry trying to pick Dak up when he's at a low point. That Dak's being attacked, that Dak right now is in a crisis of confidence.
Which is probably all true.
That he doesn't want there to be more noise surrounding Dak. Jerry is not planning on extending him before his rookie contract's over. If Jerry wants to give Dak the next 24 games, I'm all for that. The next 24 games are going to cost you about $1.1 million total. It's a bargain, no problem. But if the plan is to sign, if Jerry's saying, through 40 games, we've seen enough to say we want to give Dak a second contract, which is going to pay him a minimum of $20 million a year. To me, that would be insanity. See, how many teams are there in the NFL?
32.
There have been 33 quarterbacks to throw for at least 275 yards this year in a game. 33.
Really?
Dak's not one of them. 118 times a quarterback is thrown for 275 yards.
Wow.
Dak's got zero of them.
At the midway point?
At the midway point. So to say I've seen enough, he's getting an extension, if that is a real commitment to this offseason, Dak can come to your office, or his agent can, and get an extension, that would be, I think, an organizational error that could be hard to come back from.
This one right here is hard for me, and it's hard for me from a couple different perspectives. And one is just looking myself in the mirror and trying to be truthful with my own reality. Like, I came into this league and didn't have a lot of success early. Not like Dak. And we don't see guys come into the league who start off like Dak and don't ascend to something, typically, especially from quarterback. Now, for me, we know of my initial struggles there in Philadelphia. It took me until Dennis Green was hired in Minnesota. And he called me one offseason and said, you know something? I believe you're playing a little out of position. We're going to gear our passing attack around you. I'm going to move you in the slot some where you're not going to play outside the numbers. You're going to play all the wide receiver spots. And that's when my game and other things, too, led to it. But that's when my game took off. So I have a great deal of patience for players in their development. My problem is I got such bad information to start. Because we don't see guys who start this way and end up dipping down. Typically, they have a rough rookie season, then they start to ascend. But in this league, Jenna, it's just about life. All you need is one person to believe in you. And Dak has that in Jerry Jones. Now, I'm not saying Jerry's doing the right thing. I believe there's a right price. I'm not paying more than $25 million for Dak, and my guarantees have to be down to a minimum. There's a couple contracts out there that I would like to look at. A guy like Alex Smith, Blake Bortles, those guys. Sam Bradford, this offseason with Arizona, was getting $20 million. Yeah. So what the market is and what it will bear for a starting quarterback, we have to be careful. Like, I understand what Jerry is trying to say, and I would listen to Ed Werder that, yes, right now, Jerry's got the right to change his mind. Dak will be their quarterback next year. But Jerry, and I believe Jerry holds this, he's doing the right thing now because the quarterback is a sensitive position, especially in Dallas. He's trying to back the quarterback, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if Jerry backed away from giving Dak one of those big-time quarterback deals.
Is there anything Dak could do at this point, from now till, you know, his time in Dallas, he could do that you would say, okay, maybe he does warrant
himself? Oh, yes, of course.
How big of a turnaround would he need?
Let me see the guy I saw the first 16 games of his career again. That's all I've got. He's got to do. It's in there somewhere. I've never seen this. Like I know that when Mangini's out here and he's gonna be out here later, we talk about Pat Mahomes a lot and how you and Coach like to be late to a party rather than early on anointing guys. And I understand that. I understand there are guys that we have had where they have been one hit wonders, so to speak. But never, I've never seen to the degree of a quarterback who his rookie year is a 13-3 team and in the MVP conversation and 20 games later is not one of the 25 most efficient quarterbacks in football.
And especially without a significant injury.
That exactly right.
Dante Culpepper was a special case. He sat initially being on our team there because we had veteran quarterbacks. But when they decided to go with him as a starter, he immediately threw for 4,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, all those things. And then so two years later, had a horrific knee injury, and his career went the other way.
Robert Griffin III had an unbelievable rookie year. At the end of his rookie year, Haloti Ngata shattered his leg, his knee, I should say. Mm-hmm. There was something that happened. I understood that. Dak's been healthy, so I can't figure this one. I can't figure how a guy in his first taste of NFL football throws 4 interceptions on a season and in the year and a half since then has 10 games with multiple turnovers. That doesn't make sense to me. I can figure what's happened with Jerry. I think what's happened with Jerry is very simple. If we remember the storyline when Dak was going on his run, who was the only member of the Dallas Cowboys organization that seemed to want to go back to Tony Romo? Jerry Jones. He was talked out of it. He was talked out of when they were on that winning streak, when Romo was healthy, pulling Dak and going to Romo. He then went all in on Dak Prescott and abandoned his adopted son, Tony Romo. He can't be wrong about that. He can't have left Tony Romo on the side of the road for CBS to pick up for a quarterback that isn't going to be the long-term answer.
Do you remember what we were asking ourselves at the very beginning of the season? How much of it is Dak and how much of it is his lack of weapons? Well, the guy's got no one to throw to, so that's what's making him look bad. Do we still feel the same way? Is it all on Dak now, or is it the personnel? Is it his line?
It's an appropriate question. The offensive line is not playing good, but you can't evaluate a quarterback unless you have weapons to be able to throw to. And Dallas deciding to depart with Dez Bryant, Jason Witten's sudden retirement, they didn't have a plan B. So I don't believe it's fair to keep evaluating Dak as far as a franchise quarterback until you have an extended period of time with a player like Amari Cooper. Now, the thing about Dak is we keep playing this game that, oh, he's going to be Cam Newton one day. No, he's not. He's not going to be Cam Newton. He's not going to be Steve Young. He's not going to be that. They have to develop a game plan. And in Dallas, 99% of the players in this league, we need a system. And they do not have a system. Regardless of what Jerry says, they do not have a system that has grown Dak Prescott's game. He is not an elite passer. He has gotten worse throwing the ball. Now, Dak says in his interviews, I believe physically, mentally, I'm a better player. He probably is. But that's also led to the turnovers. Because right now, Dak, after success in his first year, he thought that he could do more in his second and third year. In him doing more, he's playing worse. So that's what we're seeing now, Jenna.
And that play America's seeing right now is, I believe, the single worst play that he's had in his career. Given the situation for his team, the situation
second
in the game,
down.
The play that he made, like the unnecessary element of it. And then this wasn't much better. That was on 3rd and 13. Number one receiver or not, fighting for 2 yards on a 3rd and 13 sack, that's not about weapons. That's about a player who his rookie year played very smart football, and this year is not playing smart football. But let's just show people the last 16 games from Dak Prescott. A credit to the Philly Voice, an online publication that made this exact comparison. That's Dak's last 16 games.
All right,
games.
Be careful, general public. These blind reveals with Nick, these things are tricky. It's a setup. I'm just going to tell you that.
Show me the guy who's on the right with slightly better numbers over the last 16 games.
Oh.
Now, if he was in Dallas, they would have benched him.
Yeah, that ain't great. And, like, Eli actually has him beat across the board slightly. And we're talking about Eli. We're writing his football obituary.
Yeah, the only reason why is Eli's not getting benched because he had a guy, his backup
he's
got
arrested. Got popped by the cops. So, like, I mean, he might be incarcerated. No. He's fine, actually. But still, the facts are where they are. And this is, I'm biased on the other side for Dak because I said, my first time on television, see, My first time on television before I'd even met you. I'm on with Colin Cowherd. I said I had two takes. One of them is LeBron's the greatest player ever. That one, standing by till I die. The other one was Dak Prescott's the league MVP of the 2016 season. That's I believe both of those things in my marrow. One of them is obviously true. The other one, I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, I told you the first one. MJ, listen, we can keep doing this back and forth. MJ, and I also told you, listen, that's going to come back down to earth.
We both were one for two on this.
But it was in his marrow. Got to take a break. Coming up, who wins in a battle of Big Ben versus Superman? That's next on First Things First. Back here in First Things First. So Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking best mascots. So Washington State came in first, followed by Georgia, Washington, and Alabama. And our own Nick Wright had a few thoughts about the list.
I love our team with For the Win on this. These have been fun all year. This is their worst rankings yet.
Ooh.
First of all, Otto the Orange not being on there is an absurdity. However, we all know the best mascots are the live animals. LSU has an actual, real, live tiger.
Oh, yeah, they have them by the visitor's locker room when you come out, too. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They have a tiger. And Georgia's got a real bulldog. They've had a bunch of them because they keep
What about
passing.
Colorado with the buffalo?
Colorado.
That buffalo almost ran us over one time.
Yes, for real.
That thing stinks, too. Man, really,
right.
He need a bath.
I mean,
they need to hose him down.
What is like Alabama?
I think
Yeah, I was just going to ask you
Unga
what Alabama's was.
That's
with
Georgia's
The whole
great.
Family of dogs.
We'll get to Cam facing Big Ben in a second, but first, Duke freshman on display here. Look at this, the incredible block by Zion Williamson on that side. Then he starts the break, threads the needle to R.J. Barrett for the dunk.
Special freshman.
Boom.
I mean, there's no athlete we've ever seen like this. The size, the speed, the power, ball handling, 6'7", 275, 45-inch vertical leap. Oh, he's a special basketball player.
Supposedly the third best freshman they got.
At least the second.
Unbelievable.
Because RJ is nice.
Blazers and Bucks. Our guy, CJ McCollum, two of his 40 on the night.
CJ dropped him with a 40-piece. CJ been playing all year like he remembers what Kevin Durant told him in the offseason. Like, hey, man, you're not on that championship corner. You're on that level beneath that championship corner. Don't worry about what we're doing up here. Don't worry about grown folks' business. CJ got the Blazers. He and Dame playing great.
What about your guy right there, Nick?
Yeah, what happened?
That's your guy from Nova, man. The rookie.
Dante.
Yeah.
Dante's one of my clients, too.
Okay.
Finally, yeah, sort of.
Certain
Miles Bridges.
23 and me. 23
and me. Miles Bridges putting Dwayne Dedman on a poster with that dunk right there.
Will he develop there? All their draft picks, they look good. Now, Kemba has developed, but their other draft picks, they don't develop the type of shooting game that other teams see.
Kemba's playing great this year. This was the Charlotte won by 11 last night. It was close midway through the third quarter. Was I watching Hornets Hawks? I might have been. They pulled out late in the fourth. It was a good game by them.
Not gonna lie,
It was 11.5 point spread. See, they won by 11. This is a killer. Why am I losing money on a Tuesday night?
Thursday night football tomorrow at 7:30 Eastern on Fox. I had to change that in the prompter all day today. I thought it was Thursday. What a game this week. 6-2 Panthers, who've won 3 in a row, taking on the 5-2-1 Steelers, who've won 4 in a row. Both teams playing as well as they have all season heading into this matchup. Both quarterbacks playing as well as they have all season heading into this matchup. Both had some nice things to say about each other.
I have so much respect for Ben, Super Bowl winning quarterback. Won a lot in this league, very cerebral, very understanding of what defenses try to do. And for him to be such a big guy, he's real good with his feet and being patient in the pocket. That's what I've learned from him.
Cam Newton's a taller quarterback who's taken a lot of hits in his young career. What advice would you give him for prolonging his career?
I don't need to give him advice. He's Superman.
What do you think of his game just overall?
Like Superman. It's pretty spectacular.
Man of very few words, but impactful words there. See, who's got the edge in this quarterback matchup, Cam or Big Ben?
Well, the Carolina Panthers are playing tremendous football. This is going to be one of our better Thursday night matchups of the season. I like to see that both quarterbacks, they do have a great deal of respect. I know Cam Newton, when he came into the league, there were certain players, because Cam, he's one of the rare players in NFL history that there's not a lot of people that when he was coming out, you can say, ah, you know, because we like to compare college guys to pro guys. And it's like, hey, this guy is a, Cam Newton was, we had never seen it. Oh, he's part Michael Vick. He's part Randall Cunningham. He's part Ben Roethlisberger. If you remember Ben earlier in his career, taking care of the football on a good organization, led them to a Super Bowl. Now, Ben is the throwing pocket quarterback. Rugged, durable. That's the quarterback that Cam would want to be, too, as he ages going in. So I know Cam has a great deal of respect for Ben, what he's accomplished in this league. When you're the Pittsburgh Steelers and you're playing the way they're playing and you're playing at home on a Thursday night, short week, I give Pittsburgh the advantage of playing at home, coming over that good, solid win over Baltimore. Now, Carolina, flying under the radar, is one of the hottest teams in the NFL right now. Great matchup. Looking forward to seeing that tomorrow
and
night.
And Carolina's feeling like, man, we control everything we want to control. Yeah, we're behind New Orleans, but we still haven't played them yet this year. We get them twice. And so here's what this matchup is going to be. It's two excellent quarterbacks, and Big Ben is the guy Cam would have been compared to, but people in basketball and football have such a hard time doing, like, the cross-race comparisons. Like, that's why people were like, is Cam Newton Mike Vick or Randall Cunningham? The guy he was most similar to in body type, in style, was Big Ben. Big Ben just not as fast as Cam.
Yes.
Not as much of a running threat, but the ability
not
to
as well
punish
dressed.
You.
He's no, those
no,
kind
no,
of things.
No, and he's not doing the Jenna Wolf workouts.
Not into the fitness program that Cam Newton is. But these are, if you look at it through half the season, two of the most well-balanced offenses in football.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the, I'm not saying they're the Chiefs or the Rams or the Saints as far as prolific, but as far as they can beat you with the run game or the pass game, I think these two teams might be the top two in the league.
And, Nick, if we didn't have these kind of outlier seasons with the new rules, the new numbers, we always have a team offensively that's going to challenge people like the Rams or Kansas City. This year, we got two of them, so it's really, really special with young quarterbacks. But if we didn't have that, we would have more attention on Carolina and what they're doing offensively with their balance and on Pittsburgh and what they're doing with their offensive balance.
I do want to focus on Cam for a little bit here because Ben, listen, Ben, I think, has over the course of his career gotten a ton of credit and deserved it. He's been to three Super Bowls. He's won two of them. Nobody doubts that he is a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Cam, I feel like with Cam, we use something similar to what I was talking about yesterday with Mike Tomlin, which is seems to be a lot more in the news when they're not doing well and a little more under the radar when they are doing well. You said last year when Cam was up and down and was struggling that I said during one of the shows, you're evaluating him like he's a Hall of Famer. And you fired right back at me. You're like, you don't think Cam Newton thinks he's going to be a Hall of Famer? You don't think he has Hall of Fame talent? He should be. Like, that's why I'm evaluating him at that level. For Cam, in year eight, after winning an MVP, after being the quarterback of a 15-1 team, after going to a Super Bowl, to put in whatever work he put in this offseason,
mm-hmm.
to shore up some parts of his game that I didn't know he was going to shore up. I thought we might just, listen, the Cam that we'd had the first 7 years, the guy we were going to get, which is a really good quarterback most of the time and just a god-awful quarterback about 25% of your games, mm-hmm. this year that 25% has gone down to almost 0%. He's been either okay or great in every game, and that's what we've said, Jenna, is all he's needed. He didn't have to make his peaks higher.
Right.
He just had to get rid of those incredibly low valleys, which is what he's done so far this year.
I really love this quarterback matchup when you compare the two, but talk to me, C, about the intangibles, the other things that maybe off the field, the team locker room guy, the team leader kind of guy. When mm-hmm. you compare these two and their trajectory in their careers, who has the edge
there? I think that, man, that's a very good question, because when you look at guys, and especially with Ben, who has a more extensive history, he's been the face of that franchise for a longer time. I just know guys on both teams. And ever since Cam was a kid, at 17 years old, he's always been a really special leader. And I can use an example. If we were going to a cocktail party tonight, and both of these guys entered the room in different entrances, I just believe there's a different vibe around Cam Newton and the energy around him compared around Ben. I believe both of them are very, very effective leaders. But I believe Cam is a really special leader. I believe he's one of the best leaders that we have. He doesn't get that distinction, because a lot of times people want to criticize him with the celebrations and things like that. But I know guys in that locker room, and there's not a lot of quarterbacks that have more respect than his teammates, than the Carolina Panthers, that they have for Cam Newton. Remember a couple years ago he had the skirmish with Josh Norman?
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, man, you don't want your quarterback out there fighting. Cam Newton won that battle. And you see how they moved on from Josh Norman because of Cam's leadership skills, and they have just constantly gotten better. So seeing both of these guys' career, knowing them both at a very, very young age, I know that Cam has a specialness about him. And when you listen to Ben's interviews over the course of time, he said enough to be able to divide a locker room, too. So Cam Newton is a special, special leader, and the Carolina Panthers and his teammates really appreciate that leadership.
To add to the Josh Norman point, you saw something similar with Kelvin Benjamin. Now, they didn't have to fight, but you saw, like, those two guys weren't on the same page. The Panthers move on from Kelvin Benjamin. It's not – I didn't see a single person in the locker room saying, ah, we wish Kelvin was still here. Like, Cam, there is certain guys, certain people, I should say, just have it. And when you're I think some of it is just a natural inherent confidence that comes with being Cam Newton. How long in his life, since what age has he been, when he walks into a room, the biggest guy, the best looking guy, the most athletic guy, the wealthiest guy? Like, sure. He carries himself like he is someone special. And that in football, I believe, can be instill your teammates with a confidence. And I'm going to add one other thing. There's something he started doing there, his MVP year, that he still does that I think is one of the coolest things in the league, and I think it rallies his teammates. That football giveaway after touchdowns, man, home or away, where no matter who scores a touchdown on the Panthers, nobody keeps it. They hand it to Cam, and Cam finds a kid wearing a Panthers jersey and gives it to him. Yeah. Like, that is...
It's one of the special things that we'll see in sports that people don't talk about. We'll talk about guys getting arrested, but Cam has made it a point. Even guys scoring their first career touchdown. Now, that's a struggle. If I score my first career touchdown, listen, Cam, you and those kids, right. I'm like Trick Daddy. I love the kids, but it's going to cost me $20,000 to be there.
Right.
All right? Like, that's a – and for his overall leadership to say, man, we're going to have an impact on people when they come to our stadium, it's just a little special thing. That's a good pickup right there.
And I like watching that. I can't wait for Thursday's game. This, to me, is the best Thursday night game of the year.
All right, look forward to it. Coming up, let's talk some Cowboys again. Do they need to completely overhaul their organization? You know who thinks so? Troy Aikman. That's next up for us. On Sunday, we got a great slate of NFL action. Highlighted by Drew Brees and the Saints, they'll take on Andy Dalton and the Bengals. It's all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. You can check your local listings for the game in your area. But football on Fox is always a sure thing.
The Bengals are 5-3. I mean, I promise it's true. I know it doesn't seem like it's true, but I checked twice this morning. They're 5-3. That's a really good game.
Time now for us to go viral. Check out this Knicks fan who got caught during, her chicken tender, dipping it into the soda, and then eating it with the whole garden taking it in on the Jumbotron. That's not right. I mean, for what it's worth, that's about 400 calories. But that's not right either.
Why are you dipping your chicken tender in Pepsi or Coke or your soda or whatever it is?
They do those commercials where they dip it in the milkshake on the Wendy's commercials, which is beyond me understanding. So I would imagine this is just an extension
dipping
of that.
Dipping fries in a Wendy's Frosty
is not even
an American delicacy, unlike many other things.
I wish they would have caught you on the...
I was trying to...
You give him, Jenna, same accommodation. You get a free badge, drinks and everything.
To Nick which both of us had a little club soda.
Oh, my God. Nick is like strip cocktail. Oh, my. They got food here. Miss LeBron, J.R. Holler. Where's Nick right at? I was like, he's back. He don't know how to act. You take him in public.
It's a true
Nick,
story.
Like Costanza with the ice cream.
While Chris was saying hi to LeBron, and JR was asking where I was gorging on shrimp cocktail. That's a true story.
Such a good story. Stories to start your morning, brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Duke and Kentucky both opened their seasons last night facing off against each other. Duke just demolished him by 34 points, and their new big three of R.J. Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Zion Williamson combined for 82 points. Nick, how impressed were you?
All right, I was wildly impressed. But I said before the year, one of these two things can't be true. It can't be that Zion's the third best freshman they got, and they're the fourth best team in the country. If Zion's their third best freshman, ain't nobody better than them. And they just beat the brakes off the number one team.
I was watching college basketball preview, and old Dickie V yelling into the camera, this is the year that Kentucky and Calipari, they get their second crown. I was like, has he seen Duke?
I don't think.
Did Duke ban him from the practices?
I don't think.
So I'm like you, Nick. How can all those things be true?
Well, they're
outstanding
not.
Duke team.
This, you know what reminds me of? The UNLV team with Tark that was just crushing people by 40 every night. I don't know if anybody's going to keep it close on them, man.
All right, to college football now. The second edition of the college football playoff rankings are out. Alabama and Clemson stayed at 1-2. Notre Dame and Michigan sliding up to 3-4. We'll have Joel Klatt on later to talk about it. But for right now, C, did the committee get this right?
Yeah, they got it right so far. Most impressive, Alabama and Clemson. Notre Dame with their early season win and being undefeated, impressive, even though they're not in a conference. I'm glad that they are up there. And Michigan with their one blemish, being Notre Dame, they've been strong, and they got one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the country. So, yes, they got it right so far. Right. Great list.
Right now, it's a very straightforward top four because you've got undefeateds, and then you have a team whose only loss is to one of the undefeated. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm gonna talk to Joel about this, man. If UCF and these teams are ineligible, they need to write into the rules they're ineligible. UCF has not lost since 2016.
Yeah,
and
they ain't played nobody since 2010 either. Well, you got to play some people.
They played some people. They won their bowl game.
Oh yeah,
New
those
Year's
are bowl
Day
games.
Bowl.
That's going to decide everything.
Oh, those bowl games.
Yeah,
I know
those
someone
Big Five
that won
teams. If they don't get in the bowl, they want man, them kids quit.
Hey, Des Bryant.
Did you win MVP of three of them?
Dez is inching his way towards employment.
Okay, exactly. Thank you.
This week, Dez Bryant worked out for the Saints. Reports are it went well and that he's negotiating a deal to sign with New Orleans. See, what do you think? You think Dez will end up inking a deal?
Jenna, I think this is the best place for him. Now, I had a few other best places for him, too. But I'm talking about right now, because a lot of the things that they have going on there, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Sean Payton and how he runs the organization. Not only how he runs the offense, but how he handles the players. There's no Drew Brees as far as throwing the football. Dez, you don't have to be open. People talking about Dez can't get no separation. With Drew Brees, you don't need it. He's the most accurate quarterback in the history of football. So not only that, their wide receiver coach, I believe, is the best in the business in Curtis Johnson. So, yes, Dez, sign that paper, man. Go to New Orleans.
If they offer him a contract, I do not care how much money it's for. I don't care if it's for the league minimum or the final eight games. If they offer him a contract and he does not take it, he doesn't want to play football. Like, there will be no that debate will then be over. Like, so I think for him, it's a great fit. For New Orleans, I'm a little more skeptical. I know we'll spend more time on it later, but go ahead. Sam.
Mike. That's Mike Thomas. That's his little nickname. Mike, call him, man. Call him on the flip phone. Tell him to get there, man. Tell him to give you a little help.
Call him on the flip phone. Yeah. Well done.
And finally, Eli Manning is still the Giants starting quarterback. The fact that that's news probably should tell you something, Giants fans. The team announced he will start this Monday against the Niners quarterback, Nick Mullins. Nothing says barn burner like Mullins versus Manning. See, what do you make of this decision?
I'm going to tell you something. Kyle Shanahan, I said this before last week's game, and we didn't know who was going to be the starter. What Kyle Shanahan does week in, week out, preparing his quarterback, regardless of who it is.
Clearly.
C.J. Beathard. Man, Nick some Mullins. Other guy I don't even know. Some guy only Brett Favre and his mama know from Southern Miss. And then we saw what he did with Jimmy G last year in the five season, the reason why there was such great enthusiasm. So Kyle, what he does, he's really, really special as far as a play caller and developing the quarterback. And Eli Manning, man, is like a horse that you used to like. And it's time to do something. I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen, but it's inevitable.
Put him out to pasture.
Yeah, what?
Put him out to pasture.
Pasture, sleep, whatever they do with him. I mean, because we're not signing up for more stud fees, that's for sure. I mean, Eli is playing quarterback. Is
the
bad.
The innuendo is fantastic.
No. As bad as a veteran quarterback would be allowed to play in this league. Mm-hmm. So that's the real thing. We thought they were last year was that, oh, man, the Giants, they're never in the top five picks. Lo and behold, man, we 6 months, 7 months later, and they are situated to be, they might as well tank the rest of the season. It does not do them, as one of my bosses tell me, to don't mess this up by winning. Yeah. You know, that's the only way that the Giants can miss out by winning a few games coming down the stretch, Nick.
Listen, they got to start Eli this week. The guy that eventually might start for him back-to-back days last week almost ran a cop over. The second day, they actually caught him for it. He got arrested for it. I don't know why he didn't get suspended for it, but, like, you can't reward that behavior by, hey, your first NFL start, Kyle Lauletta. Your wrist feel okay after the handcuffs? Like, so Eli's got to start right now, but and I heard Pat Shurmur. We think he's going to play better. We think everyone's going to play better. Man, I'm looking at the Giants' schedule. I'm looking at what they got the rest of the way. They got San Francisco and Tampa the next 2 weeks. If you can't find a win, then you can let Eli play at Philly if you don't think Kyle Lauletta's ready. And if you want to announce his farewell game is home against Chicago, that's fine. But that last month of the season, it's you got to turn the page. Now, I'm not, again, I don't think Kyle Lauletta's the answer. I didn't think he was the answer before the incident last week, and I don't think he's the answer after. But you drafted him for a reason. You didn't draft him to never play him. They already tried that with Davis Webb. Draft a guy and never play him. We know that it's over for Eli.
Yeah, and it's hard to get off of a player that's meant a lot to an organization. We grant him that. That's how Eli, they got us last year on that. You know, the head coach benched him. Everyone, media fired. Man, personalities, Hall of Famers, ex-Giants. Oh, man, they went after the coach. Man, the organization changed their mind. Maybe that coach was right. Maybe somebody need to write an apology letter
to McAdoo.
McAdoo because McAdoo was right. But, man, Eli, this is it.
There is a bit of a tragedy in the Eli Manning story, which is if in the playoff game, the game after the boat trip, right, the playoff game against the Packers, I don't wish injury on anyone, but this is in the past. If Eli had suffered a significant injury in that game, and they had decided after that game to call it quits.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how different his career would be looked at right now. He would, to me, be in better position for the Hall of Fame had he not played this last year and a half. If in his last season as a starter, got the team back to the playoffs. They were right there. Like,
yeah.
Instead, he obviously doesn't get hurt. Deals with all the team injuries last year, his awful play this year, and now it's a week-by-week, when are they pulling the plug on Eli Manning? It's a sad ending for, I believe, the greatest quarterback in Giants history.
And yet, here in New York, if the fans love you, which is hard to do when you're not playing well, there are not many athletes that they still love, it's really hard to get rid of someone. You saw that, like you said, happen last year. Back to the Cowboys now. Not the season they were expecting to have, at least not up to this point. 3-5 on the year, coming off a tough loss to the Titans on Monday night. Look, nobody's sugarcoating what's happening in Dallas right now, and that includes Troy Aikman. The 3-time Super Bowl champ said the whole organization was in need of a complete overhaul.
I've heard Jerry say, okay, look, we're going to do it differently. I'm going to do it differently. But it's the same. Nothing changes. And that, to me, is the bigger issue. Yes, coaching is important, personnel, all those things are important. But how are you going about evaluating? How are you going about running the organization? And whatever that looks like, and everyone has an opinion on what it does look like, but I'm not in the building. I have no idea. You know, I talk to people who have been inside the building and have a pretty good understanding of how things are run. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of dysfunction. And that has to change if this team is going to be able to compete on a consistent basis like the teams that you look to around the league that seemingly are in the hunt each and every year.
Look, see, Troy makes a very good point. You maybe want to just, like Scrabble, throw in your tiles and start over again. Mm-hmm. But they've got a stud running back. This is a young team. You got your center that's going to come back. Is it worth maybe just trying to move a few pieces around to see what you can make out of this team that you currently have?
Yeah, I got a tremendous lot of respect for Troy. And I like the way Troy put that because he's not in the building. As an ex-Cowboy, when you start having critical comments about the organization, to me, I listen to him very, very carefully. And Troy doesn't typically criticize Dallas in the fashion that he's doing. But I don't think it's a complete overhaul. But what Troy is saying is how they do business needs to be overhauled. As far as they could fire the coach, but it's not going to matter if Jerry is making all the major decisions. So that's what Troy's talking about, the dysfunction. Like, if you hire a coach, you have to let that coach either grow the organization, grow the what he's going to do in that locker room. It can't be always Jerry. What does Jerry think? Every time he's got comments on a radio show week after week. He's got his own radio show. As an owner, I think he's the only one in the league that's got it. So there is a lot of dysfunction to that. So when he hires a coach, is he actually going to let that coach run that organization? And that part right there, Jerry's not going to do. So Troy is right in a sense of saying the dysfunction. What difference does it make if he changed the coach if he keeps doing things the same way? Now, I think, like you, Jenna, they've gone about getting players the right way. They have drafted some great players. They have some talent, not only on the offense as far as Zeke and a couple of those offensive linemen, Zach Martin, the guard, Travis Frederick, get him back to being healthier next season.
Like, Ryan, they have
Amari Cooper. Man, they have some players, Vander Esch, Byron Jones, Jalen Smith.
Well, that's the thing. See, go ahead.
They drafted all those players, so I just believe, and trading for Amari Cooper, if you look at the college football draft, there's no guy going to be ranked as high as Amari Cooper. So they really are getting great value from the picks. Jerry's mentality is not going to change, so the dysfunction, Jenna, will continue. But I'm like you. I don't think we should tear it down. I believe we got some good pieces that we should be able to move on from.
It's the – listen, that you're absolutely right about the pieces. If we're talking about building a football team, set coach and quarterback aside. Most important pieces. Got to have a pass rusher. DeMarcus Lawrence is outstanding.
Yes.
I think he's tied for the NFL lead in most sacks over the last 2 years. Left tackle. Tyron Smith is on a great contract, and when healthy, is outstanding. They have one of the best running backs in the league. You just mentioned some of the other really good kind of in the middle of the lineup players, the guards, the couple inside linebackers. They have some blue chip players, right? What they don't have is a quarterback, is a coach, and is an organizational philosophy that you can trust. And those three things might be more valuable than the other 50 guys on the roster and every Pro Bowler you can find at corner or left tackle or pass rusher. And I think that's what Troy's talking about. When Troy says organizational overhaul or franchise overhaul, he knows the talent they have. I didn't even mention the wide receiver. They believe they have a number one wide receiver. So number one wide receiver, a pass rusher, a left tackle, a stud running back, another stud or two at the offensive line, a couple more really good linebackers, a corner they like a lot.
Yes.
All those things are things you would love to have. But you don't know if you have your quarterback. I think you know at this point you don't have your coach. And then you have the added kind of sword hanging over your head of, even if we get the right coach, is he going to be empowered to be the right coach? Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about here with the Cowboys, is how many teams in the league right now have as big of a question mark at coach and quarterback as the Cowboys? Tampa?
Jacksonville?
I think Jacksonville's got their coach, though. I like Doug Marrone. I think Doug Marrone, okay.
But you are a collection of your decisions.
Sure.
When you decide to go with Blake Bortles, let me know, hey, how many games you gonna win? You think your defense gonna shut them out in this new era of football?
Fair enough. So we can include Tampa, Jacksonville, Oakland. I'm adding to that list. The Giants and the Titans are unknowns because they have new coaches.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills are an unknown because at least they have a rookie quarterback. It's only a handful of teams that have as big of a question mark as the Cowboys at coaching and quarterback.
You mentioned organizational philosophy. What kind of organizational philosophy would work in this Dallas team, knowing that whoever you bring in has to work under Jerry Jones?
Well, I think the second part of your question undermines the first part in this way. What works is, we're going to have Coach Mangini here in a little bit. He's going to tell you what works is having a singular voice. That singular voice typically should be the head coach. Sometimes it's the general manager. What it never works as when it's the owner. And the Cowboys, that to me is where the systemic issues come from.
Jenna, it would be like we have our meetings, and there are some times we have discussions, but at no point in those discussions do anyone here on the show or on the staff think they know more football than me. And I'm not saying that to make you guys, to disrespect you, but there's a certain amount of respect. Jerry Jones thinks he knows more football than the offensive staff, especially the offense, because he lets the defensive coaches run it. Rod Marinelli is doing a good job with the defense. When was the last time the Dallas Cowboys have run a play and you said, wow, that's creative? Because I'm going to tell you the best example. New England, every week they run a play, and I'm like, goodness gracious, where'd they get that from? They stole that from someone. I saw another team run that. Wow, how did they do that? I have to slow it down and run again. Week after week after week. Let's just start with that. I'm going to hire someone, and I'm going to believe they know more football than me. Wouldn't that be a good way to start today? And if they started that way in Dallas, I believe they would be a lot better off.
Quick, say something witty about him knowing more football than you.
I got something real witty. I'm going to save it for off camera.
All right. Coming up, how are the Patriots able to keep overcoming injuries to star players? That's next on First Things First. Back here at First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini is here. Good morning, coach.
Good morning,
my friend.
How's it going?
Great.
Good
Coach
to have
I were texting all weekend.
Were you?
Absolutely.
Oh, is that why you didn't return any of my texts?
We are huge text buddies.
Yeah. Nothing.
Coach is big on the Bitmojis, which surprised me, just like Chris Carter's big on the Bitmojis.
There's no way Coach is big on Bitmojis.
My emoji game is tight.
That's what I'm talking about. Week number 10, Coach.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
I'll show you down the break.
All right, let's get to it. You remember that one time that one person doubted the New England Patriots?
Coach, that's a nice Fox suit you got
on,
too. I'm sorry.
Because it's true. The joke just left.
Sorry.
Despite not having Sony Michel or Rob Gronkowski Sunday night, they still beat the Packers. They've still won six in a row. They still have cylinders, and there's clicking going on. You get the point. They'll take on the Titans this week. Sony Michel is likely to play. Reports are Gronk is still week to week. So, Coach, I'll start with you. How do the Pats do it? How do they keep week after week winning games without key pieces of this team, you know, out there on the field?
It's a couple different things. One of the biggest things is the continuity. The continuity that they have at head coach, the continuity they've had at quarterback, and now offensively with Josh McDaniels, that continuity is very important. And Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach. There are a lot of coaches on the staff who have been there throughout the years and understand how to plug people in. And that carries over to the players. The players have a chance to develop. And so when they get that opportunity, they're in a good position to take advantage of someone else being down. I'd say that it's a little bit of a lost art in a lot of places, mm-hmm. but they've done it really well in New England for a long time, and there's huge value in it.
You were here with us right after they beat Buffalo in what was not an overly impressive game, and you said you liked what they had done with Cordarrelle Patterson, just a little bit, just that getting him on the field, trying him as a running back. Do you think, because I think the Pats know they can beat Buffalo a lot of different ways. Do you think they tried that Cordarrelle Patterson package out in the Buffalo game, anticipating we might really need it the next week in the Packers game?
No, I think it's a function of identifying what people do well and putting them in those positions mm-hmm. to do that well. Identifying what they do poorly and making sure that they're not in the position where they have to survive in that world. I remember we played a game one year where we were down a ton of DBs, and we had Troy Brown, the wide receiver, playing mm-hmm. as the slot corner. We had Don Davis, a linebacker. He played at safety. We got Earthwind Moreland off the street on Wednesday, and he played, and we ended up beating the Rams. But part of that was them playing in the right spots for us to have a chance to be successful.
Coach, I thought you did a great job of explaining, and you have insight that I've learned through the years after being there. You talked about kind of the connective tissue that they have from the head coach into their personnel, into their coaches, that is kind of a lost art because there's so much turnover. I thought one of the biggest moves was the non-move of getting Josh to be able to come back. Because now you start to see when Gronk is out, when Edelman is out, and Sony Michel is out, you still have Josh who's done with, moved in all these replaceable parts and everything. I think that's one of the best things that's ever happened that people aren't talking about. But you also talked about, and I tried to act as if I knew what you were talking about last week. You talked about, no, for real. But you taught me something. You talked about how New England, you get forced into trying something, and then in trying it, you called it something else, though. And how they try something, and then when they see it, they adopt that.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
That right there. I got you here for one reason. That right there.
Yeah, when I saw Cordarrelle Patterson playing at running back, I thought this is a really smart move. It's a guy who hasn't been able to stay on the field consistently as a wide receiver, but he's dynamic. So they've used him on the jet sweeps and things like that. But the best way to get him the ball is just to turn around and give him the ball. And then he embraces the role because now it allows him to play more. And that happens a lot where you say, okay, here's an opportunity for you. If you do well with this opportunity, everybody knows that you're going to get a chance to do more. And really, that's his philosophy with coaches. I started as a ball boy and then a PR intern and then a coaching assistant.
Master that.
Everybody,
with some enthusiasm.
You go in and you do your job. You do it well. And it's like Survivor. You get to go to the next level. And then they grow the coaches there. And so as coaches leave, another coach comes up. Nick Caserio, who's a big part of the personnel department, worked on the coaching staff. There's crossover. Mm. You work on defense and they get moved to offense. So there's this sort of whole development that goes on between the players and the coaches to create a player that has a global view as opposed to this narrow little this is what I do view.
There were two moments in the Packers game that when I saw them, I wanted to talk to you about them because they were very different, but they felt like vintage Patriots moments. One was one we joked about, which was the play that the Packers safety got, I think, unfairly thrown out on, which was when he slapped the Patriots player. And the moment he slapped him, the Pats player makes a big deal of it and points and signals to the referee. The other one was the double pass. And the reason that one stood out to me is when they showed the replay of the double pass, those offensive linemen are standing, waiting patiently, because if they go, it's illegal man downfield, right? Because it's going to end up being a forward pass. And it struck me as, man, I don't see other teams always knowing, instead of hit back, signal to the refs, get the flag. And I see other teams all the time when they run a trick play, they're either lined up illegally or they screw something. It would have been a huge play, they screw something
up.
One of those little small details. And it strikes me as both of those things I would imagine you guys practiced. Both of those things.
Yeah, and even things like as rookie players come into the league during the preseason, Bill would assign a coach on the day of the game in an early meeting to go through the rookies and teach them the differences again between pro and college football rules. Something as small as that, it would be an hour meeting of reviewing. Okay, this is what you do in pro football. It's different than college football. Things like that, that oftentimes you'll see a guy in who comes out and they spike the ball.
After making a catch.
Yeah, because they think they're down. You're like, how does that possibly happen? Mm-hmm. But from a coaching perspective, you try to cover those things so that you don't leave it to chance.
Is there also something a little psychological warfare that this franchise plays on other teams when they come in? They're not the most talented team. Yes, they have 12. But they come in and the way they carry themselves, the way they came out against the Packers and they rush through the first series, the way they do, they sprinkle in trick plays. There's something that there's this lore that, oh, they just do it better than we do. And that reputation is carried into an intimidation factor.
What Coach described is there's a tremendous amount of confidence when people put you in a situation to win, where people kind of make a tailor-made suit for every player, for every person in the organization. So there is a certain amount of confidence that comes with that. Cordarrelle Patterson is playing with more confidence. You know the reason why? He is not very good as far as reading coverages. New England has one of the most complicated passing attacks that there is in football. So now he's happier and he is empowered because he can play fast. In the league, it's about playing fast. And the more you can put people in situations where they're utilizing their strength, there's confidence developed because they don't have to play like these other guys. So I wouldn't say there's a sense of arrogance or air. There's a certain amount of confidence that my guy, my coach, is going to put me in a better position than you. So you see that coming out because they have confidence in their assignments.
And the other thing that makes you confident is how hard you work. And you know that you have worked, you have outworked your opponent. You know that you have, more has been demanded of you probably than whoever you're playing against. And so it's not just confidence, but it's a pain that you feel that if you lose to a team that you know didn't work as hard as you, that allows you to push through some barriers that other people who haven't put in the work during the week will kind of fold at that point.
Right. All right, Coach, stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up, we'll talk some Cowboys. Is Dak Prescott about to get a big extension? Jerry Jones has the answer next on First Things First. Back here with Aaron Mangini. Coach, there are three certainties in life: death, taxes, and Jerry Jones' love for Dak Prescott. Boom.
If Jenna doesn't get a laugh now, she's just going to slam the table. That's her new philosophy on her jokes.
Despite an up-and-down season for the third-year quarterback, Jerry is sticking with Dak Prescott. He said in a radio interview
yesterday. At least for now. I think there might be an affair later on. I see an affair in his future.
Dak is the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. He's young, and he's going to get extended. That's what Jerry Jones said. He also went on to say what bothers him about the season is the way the team has played, not necessarily its personnel. Coach, what do you think of Jerry's long-term commitment to his quarterback, Dak Prescott?
Well, there's a saying that where you stand depends on where you sit, and if you sit in the personnel chair, then personnel looks pretty good. You know, the players always look good, and you can look at any organization, whoever has the power, that's usually what's talked about. So if a GM has the power, players are pretty good. They're not getting coached up as well as they should have. And you look at Dallas, they had a massive overhaul in the assistant coaches. midway through the season, they paid this offensive line a lot of money. They get rid of the offensive line coach. So if you're standing, you know, behind the personnel, and that's where your seat is, then that's what you're going to support. And it's vice versa. If you're the coach and you have the power, then you need to get better players. We saw it in Cleveland, right, with Hugh Jackson. Need to get better players. So that's the narrative. Now, to me, the successful organizations are the ones that have honesty, the ones that can have constructive conflict, the ones where you can argue about players or personnel and get to the right answer. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who's right. It just matters that you get to the right answer, however that happens. And it's hard when you own the team to ever engage in that type of constructive conflict, because at the end of the day, you've got final say. So whatever you want is what you're going to get. And you also control everybody's salary. You control everybody's livelihood. So the pushback by people is not going to be as great as if you were just dealing with a normal GM head coach dynamic.
Coach, you said that situation in Dallas is hard. I might say that it's impossible. Maybe it's impossible for Jerry to be able to change what he's doing at this stage of his life. Do you believe that he's going to continue operating this way? Is this going to be the way he's going to continue until he leaves the Cowboys?
It's tough to say. One of the things that I appreciated the most, and as a head coach, is someone who would tell me the truth. And we all have friends who, when you go out to dinner, if you have a little spinach in your teeth, they tell you because they're your friend. Then you have those other ones that won't say anything and let you walk around with it. You need those friends that will be honest with you, because the only way that you have a chance to get better is by getting that honesty. Now, when you own the team and when you control everybody's life, it's harder for people to be as honest. So he's going to have to not only accept that, but almost demand that or find someone that can give him that, because it's the best thing. It's the best thing is to have someone that checks your power.
I want to talk about Dak, but Jenna, you got poppy seed in your tooth. I've been there for an hour. And so
he's a good friend.
A good friend would have told you an hour ago.
Yeah, I let you just sit there.
Because you don't have poppy seed. Double down. Yes, thank you.
So the question, though, we're talking about if Dak's going to be extended, right? And if Dak, whether or not to use what has become one of the catchphrases of this show that Coach came up with, is Dak a force multiplier? So I have a handy chart, and I just want to know where we think Dak fits on this chart. I call it the Matt Ryan line. Matt Ryan and above, those are quarterbacks I do not mind giving extensions to. All of those guys, I think if they take up the salary cap space of three players, they can make up the difference, Matt Ryan included. Everybody below, I either don't know yet, or I have serious reservations, or I know cannot. My concern for the Cowboys, we can leave that there for a moment, is that I know where Dak is on that. There ain't a face above Matt Ryan he's better than. There's a lot of faces below Matt Ryan he's playing worse than. I didn't include anyone on a rookie salary scale like any of the rookie quarterbacks. I don't want to give Coach a heart attack having Pat Mahomes up there.
Can we just look at this chart for a second?
Yes, sure.
Where would Manning have fit after he won his second Super Bowl? Where was Jimmy Garoppolo last year after he won five games? Where would he have been on your line?
Jimmy Garoppolo, by the way, this was made before the season, so Jimmy Garoppolo is not being injured by this year. Uh-huh.
Derek Carr coming off his borderline MVP season.
This was made going into the year. I made this. This is not from today.
A lot of post, you know.
You hear what Coach's point is.
Prior to, you know, when you got all the information, see, line here.
Sure.
I would have drafted Tom Brady in the first round, number one overall.
Got it.
You know, and I knew that at the time.
Okay, got it. And I would have given Dak Prescott the extension after year one. That would have been foolish.
Yes.
But we now have this information. Jerry's been watching the games. And so my question to you is, which is on the Jerry point, I understand your point, which is what I would do doesn't matter because Jerry's the one in charge. But if Jerry weren't in charge, if you were brought in to be the head of the Dallas Cowboys, is there any chance you give Dak the $20-plus million extension this offseason?
Well, obviously, I'd have a lot more information. Part of being a quarterback, too, is what they do in the room, what they do during practice, how they make other people better. You heard about Josh Gordon going to New England and having the seat next to Tom Brady. That was calculated so he could help develop him and get him better quickly. Now, is Dak doing those things? Is he the 13-3 quarterback, or is he the quarterback that struggled lately? How big was the loss of Jason Witten? How strongly do you feel that this system really is the most effective system for him? So those questions I can't give you an answer to, but you have to be objective. I think sometimes when I watch my kids play sports, I watch it with a little bit of a softer lens because they're my kids. So if you brought in Dak Prescott, you know, you may be viewing him with a little bit of softer lens.
I just don't believe that you give him an extension until you're forced to. And Jerry, he makes missteps, especially from a communication standpoint. He thinks he's a great communicator. That's why you sign up when you're a billionaire to do a weekly radio show. Billionaires don't sign up to do things that they don't do well, or they're in such a bad spot as their reality, they think they do it well. And they got people around them that won't tell them the truth. So he thinks he's a great communicator. He did not help the Dallas Cowboys by saying Dak was going to get extended. What Coach Mangini would have done was, I'm not going to say that until I have to. And then I'm going to still need a little more information. So Jerry's not helping his team by saying Dak's going to be extended.
But maybe he didn't help his team, but he was trying to help Dak Prescott, which leads to your point, which is you spoke to Ed Werder, who said he was doing it.
Ed Werder made the point yesterday that he doesn't think Jerry is planning on giving an extension this offseason. What he was trying to do was give a quarterback who's being attacked on all sides a vote of confidence, that he thinks Dak's having a crisis of confidence, so he wanted to give him a public vote of confidence, see if that helps him turn this season around.
Yeah, I just don't know very many great athletes who suddenly change the way they perform because an owner gives them a vote of confidence. And look, once you give a coach a vote of confidence, that's typically the kiss of death. Like, once you get that, you know that, you know, it's dead man walking. So I don't know if that – I get it. You want to make him feel good about his situation, but I don't think that's going to really move the dial.
All right, Coach, we'll see you a little bit later on the show. We got to take a break. Coming up, Dez Bryant, can he be the X factor that brings the New Orleans Saints to Super Bowl? Yes, heard that correctly. That's next on Fritz and Sports. There is some movement on the Dez Bryant Journey to Employment saga. This week, he worked out for the Saints. Reports are it went well. More reports are it went so well, he's negotiating a deal to sign with New Orleans. So we've been here before, right? Both with the Ravens and the Browns, and both times the two sides couldn't get a deal done. See, let's start from the Saints' perspective. What would this signing do for this offense?
I believe it, because the Saints, I think that, and people think about Sean Payton and Drew Brees, they don't think about physicality. And we saw when they drafted Mark Ingram, this offense has slowly evolved when they got off of Jimmy Graham, that they want to be a physical offense. They want to be able to power the football. They have an underrated, very good offensive line. And you could see that in the Rams game. The Rams have a good offensive line, but in those battle of the offensive lines, the Saints won that. So what they're trying to do is be physical. Michael Thomas, besides that, they don't have a real dependable wide receiver. Teddy Ginn, who they thought was going to be their 2 or 3. Now they do have a young receiver that they drafted today.
Raekwon Smith.
They have a lot of faith that he's going to develop, but he's not ready right now. Dez Bryant allows them with the bookends because Michael Thomas has been playing a lot more slot in year number 2. That's when he started last year. And this year it's evolving into he's playing the most slot that he's played in his career. Dez Bryant would be able to play outside. So the combination of both of those guys being physical, I believe it's a trait that Sean Payton and the Saints that they want to have that people don't look for. Because Michael Thomas, most of his catches, they're contested catches. That's what Dez Bryant does. But Michael Thomas has evolved where he's still athletic enough that he gets great yards after the catches, and he's got a great rapport with Drew Brees as far as his route running. So if I was to pick a quarterback in system for Dez Bryant, it would be New Orleans because Drew Brees is so accurate with the football. The way they call their plays and allow their receivers to be physical, I believe it would be a great fit. But the icing on the cake is Curtis Johnson, who is their wide receiver coach. I believe he's one of the best in the business. And the last, since Drew Brees has been there, since 06, they've had 19 receivers that had 800 yards, which Dez Bryant had last year. Well, why is that important? I just wanted to pick that number because in the season that Dez has, in New Orleans, they have one or two guys do that every year. And they're not household names. Marcus Colston, multiple times doing it. Lance Moore did it a couple times. Kenny Steele, Willie Snead before he went to Baltimore. So they've done it with some guys who have less talent than Dez Bryant, and how they teach the system and utilize their skill, I believe in the Saints, as far as their wide receivers, one of the best in the league.
Let me remove Dez Bryant's name from this. If I'm any wide receiver that's looking for a job, the Saints are where I want to go. You have Drew Brees, you have Sean Payton.
Well, depend on your skill set. If it's a guy who's a small, undersized guy who's only a deep threat, I would say don't go there because they don't throw the ball down the field. If you're talking about You talking about short passing attack? There's only two to three guys: Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, and Drew Brees. You're talking about average traveling of the football. The ball is traveling shorter. The reason why we criticize Carr is because he's not great at it. Drew Brees is the best in the business at dinking and dunking. So, as a small guy, that's not the best system for him.
Sure. And I think they brought in Ted Ginn to give them some type of that threat down the field. But I understand what you're saying. So for a receiver of Dez Bryant's size and stature, no matter who it was, if he has that build, New Orleans would be the best place, not just because of Drew Brees and Sean Payton, but because of what you said in the beginning. They got a need. The number one receiver is Michael Thomas. The number two pass catcher on the team is Alvin Kamara, running back. Mm-hmm. The number three is Benjamin Watson, a tight end in his second decade in football. And number four is Tre'Quan Smith, who has 12 catches on the year. So I understand the need for New Orleans. I understand the fit. My question for you is, and the reason that I'm skeptical of this to a degree, is how much football is Dez Bryant capable of learning? How much does he want to learn? Because if, depending on what those answers, those two questions are, that could mute the impact of Curtis Johnson, the wide receivers coach. And the other one is, what type of shape do we think Dez Bryant's in? How ready do we think Dez Bryant is to play football after going the longest he's ever gone in his adult life without playing football?
I think one of the reasons why Dez didn't sign is I believe Dez was recovering from some injuries. He had a bad knee and he also had a bad foot. He also mentioned that on social media a couple times that he wanted to be healthy. He had a couple workouts with other teams that they did get, especially with the Browns. They did give him an offer. The Saints, the reports coming from the Saints was after the workout, and there was other NFL guys there who worked out in the same day. He looked good enough that they would make him a contract offer. So that answers your question. How does he look? Sean Payton and them think that he would be ready to play fairly quick. So that's why they make the contract offer. How they teach football. Last week we saw Demaryius Thomas. He had only played in Denver his whole career. We had a lot of confidence, or Nick, you had a lot of confidence that he could go to Bill O'Brien. In a week, he had 61 yards receiving. Yeah. Now, did you think that because he had been in training camp? I believe in Sean Payton and Curtis Johnson, their ability to teach Dez Bryant more so than I do in Bill O'Brien. So if you can have confidence in Demaryius Thomas going from Denver last week, making an impact, okay, I believe that Dez Bryant, because I believe from a wide receiver standpoint, they do it as good as it can be done in the NFL.
So the Saints make Dez Bryant an offer. If for whatever reason the two sides can't come to an agreement, what would this say about Dez Bryant?
Man, if the Saints make, if they have made Dez Bryant an offer, and at the end of the negotiation, at the end of the discussion, he does not accept the offer, to me it will indicate Dez Bryant is not interested in playing football this year. Because you're running out of time. This is, for all the reasons C just mentioned, the perfect opportunity. You know you're going to the playoffs. You are one of the Super Bowl favorites on a team with, no matter what anyone thinks of Tony Romo, this is far and away the greatest quarterback you will have ever played with. It's one of the greatest quarterbacks anyone will have ever played with. If you end up not signing there because you want $4 million prorated over 8 games instead of $2 million prorated over 8 games, then I don't think Dez is actually interested in playing. That's why I think if the offer's real, he's got to take it, right? Like, this can't be about squeezing a few extra $100,000 out of the team.
What I would like to see from Dez Bryant is see some of the traits that some wide receivers get criticized. Right now, I get real, real selfish and start believing in myself. All right? The Saints believe in you. You went there and worked out. Now it's time to believe in yourself. Sign with a team. It don't matter the amount. It's basically a one-year deal. Believe you're not going to get a better situation to be able to prove people on TV, prove Shannon Sharp, prove Chris Carter wrong, man. Sign with the Saints. Make me look bad. All right? Because I really would like to see Dez back playing. Jenna, you, from the beginning, was like, wow, Dez Bryant, what if he's not playing, Chris? I was like, Jenna, you don't know what you're talking about. Jenna knew what she's talking about because now it's November and Dez Bryant's still not playing football. But I want to see Dez Bryant prove us wrong. The people who have doubted his overall ability, doubted his route running, doubted his ability to be able to learn offenses, Dez, it's a great opportunity. Go with Sean Payton and prove us wrong.
And you'd have to do it as the number two because he's not walking in there as the number one there with Michael Thomas there. Coming up, is it too early to hit the panic button for the L.A. Lakers? Hear it from LeBron next on First Things First. The unexpected energy of Exxon Mobil. Duke and Kentucky opened their seasons last night facing off against each other, and Duke demolished them by 34 points. Their new big three, R.J. Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Zion Williamson, combined for 82 points. Nick, how impressed were you with what you saw from Duke last night?
This was Coach Cal's worst loss of his career. By the number, like the biggest loss of his career, I should say. I mean, listen, I don't care what the rankings say. Nobody's better than Duke. Nobody's better than Duke. If the prospect rankings are correct and Zion's only their third best freshman, then how in the world could anyone be better than him? They could play with those three freshmen and a couple walk-ons from their math department and be a top 10 team in the country. those kids are unreal, man.
Man, Zion, 28 points on 13 shots.
In 23 minutes.
Yes.
These guys.
All right, moving on to college football.
Oh, yeah, perfect name for how he plays.
The second edition of the college football playoff rankings are out. Alabama and Clemson State at 1-2. Notre Dame and Michigan sliding up to 3-4. So there you go. There's your top four seed. Did the committee get this right?
The committee got it right. Sign me up for some semifinal game. Alabama versus Michigan in Jerry World. Sign me up in Miami, the Orange Bowl for Clemson, Notre Dame. Absolute. Sign me up. They got it right. We still got some football left to play, but right now these are the four best teams in college football.
The team least likely among these four to end up making it, I feel like, is Michigan, not because they're four, but just because they have the toughest game remaining left. I know Notre Dame's got to come to New York to play a Syracuse team that's top 15, but Michigan obviously is the toughest game against Ohio State at the end of the year. Ohio State's at 10. They're still alive. I know you're not even – you don't really want to play Alabama if they – if you're not
– No, I'm up for Alabama, but with the right timing. We still need to be tested. Our offensive line's not that good, haven't been able to run the football. If Michigan don't beat Ohio State this year, Harbaugh need to walk back to Ann Arbor and quit coaching.
Come on.
They should be a significant favorite against the Buckeyes.
Isn't it in Columbus?
It don't matter. They're a lot better than Ohio State.
Okay. Eli Manning is still with the New York Giants. He's still their starting quarterback.
We think.
Better way to put that. The team announced that Manning will start Monday against the 49ers and their quarterback, Nick Mullins. Nothing says barn burner like Mullins versus Manning. All right, what do you make of the decision, C?
Did they have a choice?
They didn't know.
I mean, who are they going to go to? Are they going to go to a backup? Is the guy on the roster? What happened to him?
I mean, he got arrested last week for allegedly trying to evade and almost running over
and
a police officer.
But he's not being penalized.
Rumor has it, though, when you're a quarterback or something, there's a certain amount of privileges when you get arrested. You don't go through the kind of red tape normal people go through.
I guess.
Because he was back at work and everything.
He was back at work that day, and the people at work said he ain't even in trouble. That's nice. I'd start Eli. You can't reward that behavior by Lauletta. And you got to give Eli, after the bye, a few more weeks. Now, I'd start Lauletta at some point, assuming he can stay between the lines, so to speak. But listen, Eli's going to get a bit of a brief farewell tour over these next few weeks. I think the last month of the season, you move on.
Yeah, it's over.
Hey, remember that one time that one person doubted the Patriots? It's funny because it's true. Despite not having Sony Michel or Rob Gronkowski Sunday night, they still beat the Packers. They've won six in a row. Everything seems to be clicking for this team, for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. They'll take on the Titans this week. Sony Michel is likely to play, but reports are that Gronk is still week to week with various ailments. See, how do the Pats do it? How do they keep, you know, trotting out there with major pieces of their team out missing and still remain successful?
Jenna, they change parts better than any team that I've ever seen do it. Belichick and Coach Mangini talked about there's a lost art to the connective tissue between the personnel department, the head coach, and how they're going to coach their position. How do you replace a running back? It's the best running back that you've had there in years, and Sony Michel, and we saw him in dominate performances when he was playing tailback. Oh, I'm going to move a wide receiver to tailback And I'm going to give him the ball 10 times a game, and he's going to average more yards per carry than my starting tailback. So I'm going to do that for two games until my starting tailback comes back. Like, who else does that? No one does that but Bill Belichick, because he knows what the skill set of his players are, and he is trying to highlight their ability, and he is trying to remove. If they're playing offense, those 65 plays, he is trying to get them to play as fast as they can and only do the things that they do well. So the reason why Cordell Patterson is not playing 60 plays at wide receiver, because he does not do that well, and he can't play fast. But that skill is transferred in the tailback, because ever since he's been in college, open field running is a skill set. He's got a great body for a wide receiver. He's big, around 6'2 and a half, around 220 pounds. He can handle the pounding more so than other wide receivers. So besides that, Jenna, I don't know how the heck they do it week after week after week.
I thought pre-snap reads made a really good point this week, reading an article about the Patriots and about what makes Belichick, asking this exact question, like, how can they do it? And the point that was made, and it's a point Coach Mangini has made, is they don't ask guys to do things they can't do. So many teams out there, they will see, okay, listen, this guy really struggles against the run as a defensive lineman. And they'll leave him out there in running situations. Well, figure a way to fight through it. The Patriots will say, we'll put you out there in passing situations. And they do that on an individual basis. Like Cordarrelle Patterson, what do you do well? With the ball in your hands, not route running. So let's remove as much route running from your job as possible. But they also do it from a team situation. We're playing a team that really struggles defending the pass. We're going to throw it 50 times. We're playing a team that really struggles defending the run. We will run the ball 35 to 40 times. Like, they have no ego about how they are going to approach each week, and that, to me, does allow them to more easily interchange their parts. Because when they lose, listen, Sony Michel, talent really matters in this league. But at least temporarily, when you lose Sony Michel, if you have a couple guys who combined can replace his production. Okay, Cordarrelle Patterson can replace his production in this area. James White can replace his production in this area. You can get through it. When you bring in the tight end Dwayne Allen that they brought in, that he's never going to be Gronk's pass catching. But can he be Gronk the blocker? So when Gronk's not out there, can we use our tight end in blocking situations like Gronk was out there? That's what the Pats do so well. The only thing that surprises me is that more teams don't emulate it.
I was just going to say, then why, if it's successful for them, why are they only the only team that does it?
The secret sauce is because players will not buy into that in other buildings. They don't respect the coaching staff. They think they know what's better for their career than the coaching staff. But when that player buys in, and when you sign with New England, and they're looking at acquiring you, you forget all that. You forget what you used to do. And it's a matter of, coach, what can you do for me? That's why we're worried about Dez. Will he learn there? Will he do that? Because we don't know if it's going to be a complete buy-in. In New England, the secret sauce is the respect that players have for Belichick and what he does, and they have more respect for his opinion of their ability than their own respect for what they think about their ability, and they surrender that to them to be used any type of way. Right. And that's what the big difference around the league is.
All right, let's talk some basketball now. The Lakers, through 10 games, are about average. L.A. is 4-6, even with LeBron still doing occasional LeBron stuff. There are reports of discord with Magic Johnson meeting with Luke Walton about the Lakers' slow start. However, according to LeBron, this team still has a ways to go before basketball pundits start drawing conclusions.
Yeah, I know what we're capable of doing, but it's going to take a while for us to continue to learn each other. It's going to take more than 10 games. So we got in, got some great work today, and we look forward to the match tomorrow. We have to get better every day because we don't have the experiences a lot of teams that we're playing in the Western Conference with years and years of experience. So, you know, every game and every practice and every film test is another opportunity for us to get better, and we cannot take those moments for granted.
I mean, he does have a point. They don't have the same history together that a lot of the teams in the West have. But could you finger point one thing that is the reason why they're off to such a slow start, Nick?
Not one thing, but I think I can give you a few things that are the reason why they are where they are right now. One is there is no consistency night to night. So for example, the Lakers, they beat Denver, a team that hasn't lost once all year. Mm-hmm. It was to the Lakers. And then the next night, they go out and lose back-to-back games to San Antonio and to Minnesota, where they just don't even look competitive throughout parts of those games. They beat Portland, a team that's 8-3. The next night,
They play their worst game of the year by far, get annihilated by the Raptors, who don't have Kawhi Leonard that night. They sat him. That would have been one of the big stories on the show if it didn't happen over the weekend when we had an NFL Monday to talk about on Monday. So why do they not have a consistent flow night tonight? Part of it's LeBron, and I'll get to that in a second. But the other part of it is what Magic's talking about with Luke Walton as far as figuring out a rotation. They have no rhyme or reason of the rotation. There's only been one team in this league so far this year that's played more different five-man lineups. Some of that's the suspension, but Luke Walton is still figuring out, when am I going to take out the starters? Am I going to go with the full five-man bench unit? And they don't have the continuity to it, and that's hurting their defense more than it's hurting anything else. But the other factor is LeBron is not yet playing like LeBron. Now, his numbers, I don't know how. I've watched every game they've played this year. Somehow, he's still giving you 27, 8, and 8. Because for some, he's always, I guess, going to give you 27, 8, and 8.
Since high school.
Since high school, he's giving you 27, 8, and 8. It's unbelievable. I told you this a couple years ago, see, that LeBron's sophomore, junior, senior year of high school averaged 27, 8, and 8.
Wow.
And in his NBA career, averages just about 27, 8, and 8. Like, for somehow, that's just what he's going to give you. But if you watch it, he is not the overwhelming dominant force on the court that we know he was for the last 30 games last year in Cleveland and the entire playoff run. And if he's not that, and Ingram hasn't been great, and Lonzo's been hit and miss, and they don't really know what Rondo's role is yet, that gives you a mediocre team that right now certainly has not found its way defensively.
To me, LeBron looks a lot like at a certain stage last season when they were in between two or three of those trades.
Yes.
And he was just trying to give it a chance, but he was trying not to be the dominant personality on the court and on the team. So you could see that he would allow things to happen during the game, not get really, really upset because he believes in the long processing, and I just believe in changing location, that LeBron is, he's a little sensitive towards overreacting, and he's done this a couple times with talented teams, talented players. In the NBA, you're going to struggle. Miami, those first 20 games were not good. Now, talking about Dwayne Wade at that time was a superstar. Chris Bosh was a legitimate, underrated NBA star, getting 20 and 10. So they struggle. He goes back. Kevin Love. We know what kind of resume Kevin Love had before joining LeBron in Cleveland. And Kyrie Irving. I mean, LeBron had never played with an offensive player like Kyrie Irving. So they struggled. Why wouldn't we expect the Lakers to struggle? When we did the preseason, I said they were struggling. I'm going to give them 20 games. We're only halfway through that. So their roster, the way it was put together, when you put Rondo, when you put Stevens on these types of teams, the spacing on the court, when you're trying to figure out Kuzma, Ingram, do they play together? So they had a lot of things when you put this roster together. There was no way they thought this was going to be a finished product. And it's going to take at least 20 to 30 games to be able to see a better product than what we're seeing now, Nick.
And I think, and I'm not reporting this, I have not talked to anybody close to LeBron on this, just my gut feeling here. I think LeBron feels about Luke Walton the same way I do, which is, I don't know, which is we'll find out. And why does that matter? LeBron is not doing some things he's done in years past for other coaches, which is solving problems for them. LeBron is letting Luke Walton figure it out. I think because...
How does that behoove LeBron?
Because you got to figure out if Luke Walton's the right coach. You want to figure out if Luke Walton can help you because it is not about this year. The Lakers will make the playoffs this year either way. They will not beat the Warriors this year either way. But what you have to figure out is next year, when you add that other star that I fervently believe they will, is Luke Walton the coach? I don't think Magic knows if he's the coach.
No.
And I think that the best way to find that out is let him be the coach. Don't have LeBron be the coach and player. Let Luke Walton be the coach. And if Luke Walton wants us to run this type of offense and to play this type of style, yep. Okay. Let's see how that works out. And then I think now Luke Walton, I believe, will be the coach the whole year. And I think in the last 30 games, if they're in a playoff push, then it'll change. Because I don't think LeBron's about missing the playoffs to learn lessons. But early on, let's see what Luke Walton can do the first time he's coaching with real pressure and real expectations, and we'll find that out. I don't think it's fair to prejudge Luke Walton in either direction now, and I think we got to watch and see.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, a little more football. Who wins in a battle of Big Ben versus Superman? That's next on First Things First. Thursday Night Football. returns tomorrow with the Battle of NFL Heavyweights as Cam Newton, Christian McCaffrey, and the Panthers battle Big Ben, Antonio Brown, and the Steelers. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
Shanks, call Nick and I. We'll spice up that Fox Square. We'll have it popping here on.
Oh, yeah, with Cam playing?
Yeah, absolutely. We know the pregame show starts at 7:30. Nick and I start at 6:30.
Yeah.
We'll get it hot, ready for Straight Hand, Howie Long, and Bradshaw.
Back with Coach Mangini, where we will be on the couch just watching the two of you guys, apparently.
I'm going to be here at 4 getting the crowd hyped up.
That's what you're going to do.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about this game. The 6-2 Panthers, who've won 3 in a row, taking on the 5-2-1 Steelers, who've won 4 in a row. Both teams playing as well as they have all season heading into this matchup. Both quarterbacks playing as well as they have all season heading into this matchup. Both had some nice things to say about each other.
I have so much respect for Ben, Super Bowl winning quarterback, won a lot in this league, very cerebral, very understanding of what defenses try to do. And for him to be such a big guy, he's real good with his feet and being patient in the pocket. That's what I've learned from him.
Cam Newton's a taller quarterback who's taken a lot of hits in his young career. What advice would you give him for prolonging his career?
I don't need to give him advice. He's Superman.
What do you think of his game just overall?
Like Superman. It's pretty spectacular.
There's a wealth of information.
Cam gives a
there.
Real analysis. Big Ben's like Superman. Superman's quit asking me about it. So.
It worked the first answer. I'm going to say it twice. Coach, who do you think has the edge in this quarterback matchup between Roethlisberger and Cam Newton?
Yeah, I've always been a huge fan of Ben Roethlisberger and playing against him year after year. There's a resilience to him, and every year we start talking about how the Steelers are, it's a little bit like the Patriots. It's a different take on it, but the Steelers are done, Ben's done, and then suddenly they hit 4 in a row, 5 in a row, 6 in a row, and the difficulty with coaching against him is the broken plays become big plays, and he doesn't get enough credit for the way that he's able to generate plays down the field when he moves around the pocket. It's such a huge part of being able to stop them is if you can keep him in the pocket. Now, he provides some opportunities for multiple sacks because of it, but it's dealing with his resilience, to me, gives the edge, where I think Cam, when he gets going and when it's going well, it really goes well. Mm-hmm. Now, when it's not going very well, it's not consistent whether or not he's going to climb out of that hole, or whether it's gonna keep going bad. So I give the edge to Ben just because of the resilience factor.
But is it what you're saying about when it's not going well for Cam, we've seen that with Ben too, right? Like, that's why he has the 6 interception game. That's why there have been games for Big Ben where he does let go of the rope. Where
there are games that Ben, like all the good quarterbacks, but Ben has been more consistent than Cam as far as when I'm high and when I'm low. Now, Ben, if he start going bad, Ben's going down with the boat. Now, I'm going down throwing it. I'm not going to be conservative. That's just been his personality. But when you talk about consistency as a passer, I would say there's no comparison to who Ben Roethlisberger is. There's no pass on the field that he can't throw. There is no arc on the ball that he can't make. So he is surgeon-like as far as a quarterback. He can sit there like Drew Brees, or he can rough it up, muck it up, like he did last week against Baltimore, where his numbers weren't great, but the intangibles got knocked out of the game and to be able to come back, and that ability to be able to scramble and make that defense keep covering, that's one of the things that makes him really, really special.
And when you pick Ben off, or when you sack Ben, or when you force a fumble, you know that he goes to the sideline, he may be frustrated, and you may be able to get another one, but he's coming out with the same mentality the next time. There's no concern about him making a mistake the next time. He's going to attack you. He's going to take some calculated risks. Where with Cam, I don't know if it's always that same approach. It seems like he's doing a better job getting through adversity this year and as he gets older. But it can steamroll a little bit drive to drive with him.
Listen, I think prior to this year that the book on Cam Newton was the hot and cold, the peaks and valleys. We know that. We talked about that a ton last year. I also think now, as Cam's in year 8, if we look at his career in its totality, what he's accomplished in Carolina has become, I think, at this point,
relatively underrated. He gets there as the number one pick because they're 2-14. By year three, they have a bye in the playoffs. For three straight years, years 3, 4, and 5, they get at least the divisional round, culminating in a Super Bowl appearance. Now, year six was a bad year by all accounts. I don't know if it was a Super Bowl hangover, what it was. Last year, they win 11 games. He was spectacular in a playoff duel against Drew Brees that they lost. And this year, they're 6-2 with none of those Valley games for Cam Newton. Like, so in seven full seasons, three times to the divisional round, four times to the playoffs on a team that does not have the institutional support of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's not walking into a situation where Big Ben's rookie year, he can just be a caretaker on a 15-1 team, right? Like, so I think that
way more than a caretaker.
Well, I think that you're not giving Ron Rivera and what they do defensively. Because Cam's got a huge advantage defensively. Actually, if you look at it, I would be willing to bet this, that the Carolina Panthers defense has been better in 8 years than the Pittsburgh Steelers defense in that mystique. There ain't no steel curtain in Pittsburgh, bro.
Oh, but there was in the beginning of Ben's career. When Ben went
down. No. I'm talking about from the time they've been.
Since Cam came in the league.
Yes.
Sure, absolutely.
I can guarantee you that there has been more stability from a defense. How many points did they have to win in those games? Just from a talent standpoint, the reason why Cam gets criticized is because his up and down trajectory and his fundamentals are not as good as the great quarterbacks. When you watch Cam, you watch those highlights, you watch his feet. And I made it a point. When I broadcast the Saints game versus the Falcons, I made sure I spent the most time with who? Drew Brees. And I asked Drew Brees, man, what is the key? I saw you in college, Drew. You were accurate with the football. How do guys get more and more accurate? He said, Chris, it's a combination of two things. The number one thing is I know where everyone is. I know the protection. I know where it can be weak. So I know where to throw the ball to in the offense quick so that I don't have a bad play. And the number one thing to throwing the ball accurate, Chris, is my feet. You have to watch throwers and watch their feet. Cam has poor, poor footwork. Now, through this season, with North Turner, he has gotten a lot better, but I'm not going to move him to that status when I've only seen him and Norv Turner for this small sample size. So Cam Newton's inability to be consistent with his feet, that's why people like Mangini and myself, the commentary is harsh on Cam, and he was the number one pick in the draft.
Right.
There should be high expectation because he's got tremendous, tremendous athletic and also coaching, throwing, motion, arm talent.
And I think you ding quarterbacks all the time for not winning a second Super Bowl. I mean, you're not even dinging Cam for not winning the first Super Bowl.
Hold on. First of all, what you're saying there's flatly not true. I think Super Bowls are, you're going to hate this, are a lot more random than people give them credit for. I think people assume as soon as a coach wins a Super Bowl, I said this yesterday, there's a lot of coaches never won a Super Bowl that I think are great coaches. I think Ron Rivera is a great coach. And there's a handful of coaches that have won a Super Bowl that I don't know if they're a great coach. I've watched Cam Newton, and last year, or the year before last, was really disappointing. He had won an MVP. He was excellent. And then the Super Bowl, it seemed like the moment he didn't dive on that fumble, his career went south. And then last year, they win 11 games. He was spectacular in the playoff game. And this year...
But why wasn't he spectacular during the regular season?
He was good. He was inconsistent fundamentally throwing the football. There's no doubt about that. But when we evaluate Cam, we've talked about this before. You have to include the running stuff. You have to include what he does for that team's rushing attack. And I understand your point that he maybe hasn't lived up to the number one pick, that hype and the physical ability. But I think he gets an unfair rap. And at 6-2, he's been one of an MVP candidate this year heading into this game against the Steelers.
NFL action highlighted by Drew Brees and the Saints taking on Andy Dalton and the Bengals. How good are the Bengals, Nick?
They're 5-3.
It is all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area.
Yeah, I mean, Saints-Bengals, underrated game this weekend. Excited for it.
Back here with Coach Mangini, the Cowboys are not having the season they thought they'd have coming into this year. That's because mediocrity is not the goal. 3-5 on the year, coming off a tough loss to the Titans on Monday night. Hey, nobody's sugarcoating what's happening in Dallas right now, and that includes Troy Aikman. The three-time Super Bowl champ said the whole organization was in need of a complete overhaul.
I've heard Jerry say, okay, look, we're going to do it differently. I'm going to do it differently. But it's the same. Nothing changes. And that, to me, is the bigger issue. Yes, coaching is important. Personnel, all those things are important. But how are you going about evaluating? How are you going about running the organization? And whatever that looks like, and everyone has an opinion on what it does look like, but I'm not in the building. I have no idea. You know, I talk to people. I talk to people who have been inside the building and have a pretty good understanding of how things are run. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of dysfunction. And that has to change if this team is going to be able to compete on a consistent basis like the teams that you look to around the league that seemingly are in the hunt each and every year.
All right, Nick, what do you think about what Troy Aikman said? Does there need to be some semblance of an overhaul, with the, at least with the brass, with this Dallas team?
Well, I'm glad you said the brass, because I think as far as the roster goes, they have a lot of the foundational pieces any team would want. Franchise left tackle, on a great contract, by the way. Check. A legitimate pass rusher. Nobody in the league's got more sacks over the last 2 years than DeMarcus Lawrence. So check. A superstar skill position guy. That's Zeke Elliott. Check. As an added bonus, they think they've got a number one wide receiver now. I know they like their linebackers in Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, both on rookie contracts. Byron Jones is playing well at corner. So structurally, they've got a lot of the pieces you'd want. But I don't think they know if they have their quarterback. I know they don't know if they have their coach. And institutionally, and this is something we've talked about earlier, do they think that the system they have, which is Jerry Jones' trickle down, is one that can be successful? Is that what Troy's talking about? That question at quarterback, real question at coach, and a question of no matter what coach you put in there, will he be empowered to be successful and put his system in place? I think that's what Troy's talking about with the franchise overhaul.
Well, there was a significant overhaul this past offseason.
Yes.
They got rid of most of the coaching staff. They've already fired the offensive line coach again this year. And look, they're 2 years removed from being 13-3. So Jerry Jones could say, I had the coach of the year 2 years ago. I had the rookie of the year 2 years ago. Are we closer to that team than we are to the 9-7 team last year, or to where we are right now? And sometimes there you can overreact to problems. And to me, it's more important to identify where the weaknesses are, and that comes with honesty and hard conversations, than it is to say everything's wrong, throw it all out, start over. I don't know if that's the best approach at this point.
Yeah, they overhauled the coaching staff. They overhauled this year as far as the offensive line coach. Offensive line not playing as well. Released the offensive line coach. I'm just not in the same with Troy. I just can't say overhaul, because they got good talent. Organizations start with organizational control and what type of talent. Then it becomes getting that talent. Are you going to empower the people who are coaching up the talent? And I got no problem with how Dallas does things defensively. Now, I don't like their effort in the last game as far as on third down not being able to get off the field. But as a whole, their defense and Rod Marinelli, they can play for me and he can coach for me. I believe they do a good job. The biggest problem is Jerry Jones and the staff there, and they're always meddling in the offense. Who's the quarterback? How they're going to do things? Because Jerry, he thinks he knows more football than the people in the building. And whoever he puts as the head coach, he's got to move on from Jason Garrett. He's got to be able to trust that person. And you got to be able to have some hard conversations day in, day out, week in and week out, that I'm going to run the offense my way. Jerry Jones has no clue of what's the best way to run an NFL offense in 2018. And for him to keep thinking that he does, and he keeps saying that I'm going to empower my quarterback, this is a Dak system. No, it's not. This offense is a dinosaur. No one's playing offensive football the way the Cowboys are. You can't overpower NFL teams anymore. They do nothing sideline to sideline, all right? And they got no creativity. They run no reverses, no speed sweeps. How are they going to survive? So that's the biggest problem in how they're doing things. So what I think should be blown up is his philosophy of meddling with that offensive staff, which I believe has become a problem.
And when you look at it, Jason is actually a good fit for Jerry. They seem to get along well. They seem to be able to operate well. And if you're in that position where you know that you are going to constantly put input into the game plan, you're constantly going to be adding your opinion, then you better get a guy that's going to accept it and implement it, or you got to go extremely the other way, like when he hired Bill Parcells.
Yes.
But there's not very many Bill Parcells. There's not very many strong enough personalities to walk into that building and say, hold on a second, you need to go back to your office and let me take care of this and evaluate me on what I do. It's hard to find those guys.
You mentioned the importance of having honest conversations. And I know when we've talked about the Patriots, even though Bill Belichick is the first and final word there, you guys could have honest conversations with him. And I think you've told stories about how in the meetings, no matter where, if you were in the meeting room, no matter where you were in the hierarchy, you were allowed to give input, correct?
Yeah.
Like all ideas were welcome. Can you ever have an honest conversation with the owner of the team?
Yeah, you can. Now, typically those conversations take place on your way out. Okay. They may take place on your way in. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been owners I've had really honest conversations with, and I thought that we had a complete understanding as to what the future looked like. And then about two or three games into the season, his view of what the season looked like and my view were radically different. Now, unfortunately, his view took precedent.
Right. I believe in talking to some people there in Dallas, that there have been some hard conversations with Jerry Jones, and especially in the personnel department. Stephen Jones has done a great job. He will never get credit because he's working under his dad. But if you look at the players that they have drafted, where they come and how they fit into that team, that thing, they have done a good job. They got a great center. They got a great right guard. They got two middle linebackers. They got a corner. Now they traded for a wide receiver who's better than any of the upcoming wide receivers in the draft. They got Zeke from Ohio State. Man, they have really done it the right. Stephen Jones has told Jerry, listen, we can't draft Johnny Manziel. Oh, they got off of Johnny Manziel. They had a hard conversation about Dez Bryant, about releasing Dez Bryant. Someone had to make Jerry do that. So I think that he has done it. He needs to be involved with that head coach in this next decision. I believe that's the next bit. That's the best thing for this franchise moving forward.
We just keep talking in circles and circles. If Jerry Jones does the following couple things, but no one's telling Jerry Jones to do it, so he doesn't do it. And if you don't change anything, nothing changes.
Would that be a reason to you, in your opinion, coach, to stay away from, if they do move on from Jason Garrett, to stay away from either a first-time coach or a college coach? Because they would seem to me like everyone's going to say Lincoln Riley. Everyone wants to hire Lincoln Riley. So just, but anyone that, it would seem like the guy that would be least empowered to tell Jerry Jones, go back to your office, would be a first-time NFL head coach from the college ranks. Like,
look, then those guys would be the least equipped to be able to do that because they don't know about pro. If you haven't coached in pro football, it's hard to sit back and say someone who's been in it for as long as Jerry, hey, you're wrong. It's Parcells was a different animal than a first-time college coach or a first-time head coach.
I think there's a better chance of Lincoln Riley quitting Oklahoma and going to coach Oklahoma State Cowboys than to coach the Dallas Cowboys. Like, people on this Lincoln Riley kick. Lincoln Riley. Be careful what you wish for.
That's the name I mentioned because that's the name everyone's mentioning. The point that I'm making is when you're talking about.
It ain't my job to repeat people that I don't believe have the right information.
Fair enough, see. But the point that I'm making is when we're talking generically about who the next head coach for the Cowboys is, do you think, given what we've talked about here, it's better it be a guy who's been an NFL head coach already?
I think the Dallas Cowboys coaching job is one of the worst in sports. College, pro, no matter where you come from. Jerry Jones thinks he knows more football, and he's definitely got more money. All right? So for him to swallow his pride, I don't think that's going to happen. You don't win them Super Bowls early in your career. You don't get into the Hall of Fame. But he thinks it's all by him, his own doing. So that's one of the worst jobs in football. So college, go to CFL. It ain't going to matter. Jerry going to chew him up unless he changes the way he does things and empower that coach, it don't matter where to get him from.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.